Who benefits from early heart valve replacement?
Targeted heating of the brain to control essential tremors.
How about prostate cancer prevention?
And cardiac resynchronization therapy. What is it and who benefits?
That's what we're talking about this week on PodMed, the weekly look at the medical headlines from Johns Hopkins. Posted on August 16th, 2013, I'm Elizabeth Tracy.
And I'm Rick Lang, professor of medicine at Johns Hopkins and vice chairman of medicine at the University of Texas in San Antonio.
Rick, why don't we start with something that I disparage all the time, of course, and that's prostate cancer. We're going to take a look at the New England Journal of Medicine, this long-term trial using finasteride to see if prostate cancer can be prevented.
Well, Elizabeth, I know you disparage it because it seems like it's been in the news consistently, but I'll remind you that currently a man in the United States has a 16.5% lifetime risk of receiving the diagnosis of prostate cancer. But this particular study in the New England Journal is a follow-up with regard to the use of a drug called finasteride, what's called a 5-alpha reductase inhibitor, for prevention of cancer. And the initial results were reported back in 2003. And it looked like this drug significantly reduced the risk of cancer, albeit at an increased risk of diagnosing high-grade cancers. So as a result, it kind of fell out of favor. Well, this is the 18-year follow-up. And why that's important is because diagnosing cancer is of secondary importance. What's really important is, does it actually improve survival? So in this 18-year follow-up of almost 19,000 men who are randomized to finasteride or placebo, what they realized is that those who received finasteride had a 30% lower risk of developing cancer, a slight increased risk of developing high-grade cancer, but more importantly, no difference in survival. So although finasteride reduced the risk of cancer by one-third, it didn't improve survival.
Clearly, this is one of those things we can give it a miss. Probably not a good idea to go on finasteride if you're worried about your prostate cancer risk. I do have to say that you have editorialized in the past that one way to not worry about prostate cancer is just don't get screened. And that's exactly what the editorialists say.
Exactly. In fact, when you look at what kind of prostate cancers the finasteride reduced, it was the low-grade cancers, which are not likely going to cause problems unless we treat them when they don't need to be treated. So you're right. If people want to reduce the risk of diagnosing cancer, then don't get the screening PSA.
Okay, I wonder if we're going to get some kind of snarky comments from our listenership about that one, particularly anyone who's interested in urology. Let's stay in the New England Journal of Medicine and talk about this issue, essential tremor, something that affects a lot of people. It's very bothersome, and whether we can ablate very precisely a certain part of the brain to help those folks.
It's the most common movement disorder, this thing called essential tremors. As much as 4% of the population develops it. It's kind of this rhythmic oscillation of the hands. And although it's not medically dangerous, it's progressive, it's disabling. And although we don't know exactly what causes it, we do know there's a familial predisposition. And we also know the tracts in the brain that are responsible for the kinesia, that is the movement. In the past, for people that had very severe tremors, we could actually do surgery or deep brain stimulation to try to minimize them. So this will be the smallest study we report on today. It's only 15 patients. It's not randomized. It's an open label study of patients that had severe disabling essential tremors. And some of them had tremors for as long as 30 years. And they received a treatment called thermal ultrasound ablation. They were fitted with a crown on their head. They were put into an MRI magnet that precisely identified the anatomic relationships. And then on this crown, they had an ultrasound that could precisely locate beams to cause heating of the specific tracts in the brain. And in this particular trial, it was very effective in reducing tremors and improving quality of life in these 15 individuals who received it.
Wonderful advances here, things that utilize these amazing technologies that we have now for brain imaging and also for focusing the beam so it ablates very specifically that area of the brain that seems to be troublesome. So my question, of course, always has to be, yeah, okay, well, then what happens down the road? Because nature abhors a vacuum. We don't keep anything around that's not necessary. So what are the consequences of ablating these tracts?
Oh, great questions. First thing I need to tell our listeners is they follow these patients up to a year, and it looked like the results were durable. Now, there are some side effects, because even though we focus these beams on a particular part of the brain, there are other areas right around it that have essential functions. So, for example, some of these people had difficulty walking. They had ataxia that lasted for about a week. One of the individuals had permanent dysesthesias, or paresthesia, that is trouble feeling in the index finger of his dominant hand. So there are potential side effects. This is a very limited study. I'm going to call it a proof of concept. But the nice thing is, it's non-invasive. These patients had the procedure done, and they went home the next day. So this holds great promise. But as you mentioned, we need more studies.
But certainly good news for those folks who have essential tremor, because gosh, when I've seen them, they just can really be very disabled by that.
In fact, some of these people couldn't even feed themselves. And then after the procedure, they were able to eat in a normal amount of time.
Wonderful news. So let's turn now to the Journal of the American Medical Association, a very common problem. I always laugh about it. MVP, no, not most valuable player, mitral valve prolapse. And who benefits from early valve replacement?
Most people that have mitral valve prolapse don't have any significant problems from that, but there is an occasional individual in which the valve is so thickened or so elongated when it should close, it doesn't close adequately, and the valve ends up being leaky, or what we call regurgitant. Based on older studies, when that happened, we would recommend that the patient have this watchful waiting approach. We would continue to follow them unless they developed symptoms related to that, or unless it began to affect heart function. And if it didn't, we say, well, let's not do surgery now because it carries some risk, and let's just keep waiting. What's happened is the surgery has gotten much better. And instead of replacing the valve, now we can actually repair the valve in more than 95% of the time. So this was a study that addressed the question, with these newer techniques, is it better to operate earlier? And this wasn't a randomized trial. It was a registry of over 2,000 patients that had mitral valve prolapse. A half of them had no indication for surgery, but nevertheless, many of those individuals had surgery soon after the diagnosis. And what they discovered was that the patients that had surgery earlier were less likely to have heart failure over the ensuing 10 years. It looked like it reduced the risk of heart failure by about 60%. It also reduced the risk of mortality by about 40%. Furthermore, it appears that the benefit of surgery was sustained for 20 years.
I find this really interesting. And of course, the nerd in me is saying, interesting. Is there something about the mitral valve and dysfunction of the mitral valve that predicts subsequent more severe heart problems, such as heart failure? Because what in the world would it be about this mitral valve that would subsequently lead to heart failure?
Now we can repair the valve. We can actually do the surgery before it begins to affect the left ventricle. That is cause enlargement of the heart. Because once you initiate that, it probably continues on even after the valve is repaired. So the message of this is for people with severe regurgitation and mitral valve prolapse, have your surgery done earlier rather than later at centers with high volumes of these procedures.
Okay, so I feel better now. The mechanism then is that a dysfunctional mitral valve then leads to left ventricular dysfunction and consequent heart failure.
That is correct.
Okay. Well, I feel better about that. And I'm sure people with MVP who have a severe problem also are going to feel better about it. Let's turn to our final study then. Who benefits from CRT? That's also in the Journal of the American Medical Association.
CRT is what's known as cardiac resynchronization therapy. For people that have heart failure, we have a number of medications that can actually improve survival and improve symptoms. And in an occasional individual where the ventricle is not squeezing synchronously, that is, all the walls are not contracting at the same time, we can actually put a pacemaker on one wall and the other wall and pace it so that the whole heart synchronizes the contraction. And we know that this therapy, in addition to medication, can also improve symptoms and reduce mortality and reduce hospital readmissions. But the question is, who most benefits from it? And this was a retrospective cohort study of Medicare beneficiaries who received a CRT and were in a national registry. Over 24,000 patients. This is a high-risk group. The three-year mortality for this group was about 26%. And those patients that received the most benefit were those that had abnormalities on their EKGs that showed that conduction through the heart was particularly delayed. For our healthcare providers, that is people that had a left bundle branch block and had a QRS duration of more than 150 milliseconds. Conduction to the heart is really, really slow. By pacing both sides of the heart, we can significantly improve survival and decrease heart failure.
Really good news. I like all these good news studies. They're making me feel very happy this morning. And of course, this all looks like where it seems like we're really headed in medicine in general, which is very specifically targeting, hey, who is going to benefit from this therapy? And therefore, we can avoid it in folks who really aren't going to benefit.
You're right. Currently, about 30 to 40% of people that we're using CRT for don't receive any benefit. You put them through a procedure that carries risk. It's a very high cost. And if it doesn't help, then we shouldn't be doing it. So what this study does is it informs us which patients are most likely to receive the most benefit from it.
Excellent. So on the blog this week, I'm going to do the focused thalatomy for essential tremor from the New England Journal of Medicine, just because I really like it. And it seems like it could benefit a very large number of people. That's a look at this week's medical headlines from Johns Hopkins. I'm Elizabeth Tracy.
And I'm Rick Lang. Y'all live well.